This year, we turned Zoom into a verb, Airbnb into a refuge, and watched as lawmakers in congressional hearings accused big tech of illegally squashing the competition. What a year it's been for some of the world's biggest tech companies. And now we're going to take a look back with two tech editors and reporters. Ina Fried is a chief technology correspondent for Axios, and Rani Mola is senior data reporter for Recode. Hello and welcome to both of you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, in the midst of so much this year, we watched federal scrutiny of some of the tech giants heat up, Facebook, Twitter, Apple, and Google. And now at least two of those companies, Google and Facebook, are the subjects of lawsuits from federal regulators and state attorneys general. Ina, I'll start with you. How big of a shift was there in Washington this year over tech regulations?
Well, I think you mentioned that the suits themselves are the action. I think the theater of having the executives hauling them before Congress was more an act of frustration and good political theater. The real action is that they went to court against two of these companies. And we haven't seen that really since the Microsoft trial, two decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie, do you think we're going to see significant changes as a result of Washington's renewed interest in antitrust?
I mean, I should hope so, just by the sheer number of cases that are being filed so far against, there's three against Google, one against Facebook. There's probably going to be ones against Apple and Amazon. Alternatively, Congress could certainly pass legislation that could govern these tech companies a little bit more than we've been doing.
Sure, because there have been a lot of hearings, but it seems like Democrats and Republicans are talking past each other.
Yeah, I think, the fact that we did see bipartisan lawsuits is a sign that there is some common ground. I think a lot of what we saw on Capitol Hill was actually different frustrations. You had Democrats talking about one thing. You had Republicans talking about anti-conservative bias. So there was shared frustration, but not about the same thing. So I think the chance of legislation is probably smaller. In the lawsuits, they were actually able to find enough common ground, which is something, and something in 2020 where there wasn't a lot of bipartisan consensus on anything.
You know, something else that we saw this year, big tech seemed to get even bigger, even as the rest of the economy really flailed. Ina, were you surprised that big tech had a banner year by some measures in the middle of what is a really tough time?
Not really. I mean, it is remarkable how many things we were able to keep going in some form thanks to tech. So for those who could work at home, who could safely stay home, you could listen to concerts over the internet. You could do a lot of the things you'd want to do. It wasn't the same. But mm-hmm. tech is really what enabled it to be somewhat bearable for some portion of the population. Again, I don't want to make it seem like this was equally accessible because it wasn't. But just imagine how much worse this year would have been 10 years ago, 15 years ago, before we had video games, Minecraft, Roblox, Peloton, all the things that enabled some semblance of normalcy or at least an alternative to the way we used to do things.
Mm-hmm. Among all of the tech that helped us through this year, Airbnb seemed to do really well. It was a company that had its ups and downs, but the short-term rental company saw their business model upended during the pandemic, but then it rebounded by the end of the year with a huge IPO. I mean, Ronnie, what does this story tell you about Airbnb in the Silicon Valley?
Well, I think it points to a fundamental thing about software companies and a lot of tech companies these days, and that a lot of these companies don't actually own the thing that they're selling. Airbnb is the software that rents out people's rooms or homes. And, so they didn't have to suffer necessarily as bad. And then there's part of the story has to do with just like one of those flukes of the pandemic, in that they're able to sort of pivot their site to gear it more towards, hey, if I live in New York City, where is a place upstate New York that I could, get out of my tiny apartment for?
Mm-hmm. We also saw this rise of Zoom when so many of us, our lives are now shifted where we're doing remote work. And Amazon saw this explosive growth as the trend towards online shopping accelerated. There's actually one statistic here. In the third quarter, Amazon raked in about a record $6.3 billion in profit, triple what it made a year before. And we also saw huge growth in streaming services. Do you think those trends will continue after this pandemic is over, Ronnie?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. You saw the move to e-commerce has been, it's been a decade long. This was just sort of one of those final pushes. You know, it was harder to convince people to, say, get their groceries online. But during the pandemic, that became a necessity for a lot of people. I think once a large portion of the population has had exposure to buying things online, it's kind of hard to go back from there.
I would agree. I would just say that a little bit of a contrarian take on e-commerce is that really the traditional commerce companies, all the people that operate bricks and mortar, whether it's big companies or small business, had been sort of slowly suffocating, slowly seeing their business run off to Amazon and other e-commerce companies. The pandemic actually forced them because it took away all their business temporarily, not just what was slowly shifting to Amazon, but everything, forced them to learn things like curbside delivery, taking orders online and fulfilling them locally. Those are actually skills that will benefit them. So I still expect Amazon to keep chipping away and taking more market share. But I do think there is perhaps a silver lining for retailers that they had to learn how to do some of their business online this year. And those skills may well serve them in the years to come.
Ronnie, you've also been following the continuing saga of WeWork. You actually recently wrote that the pandemic could have crushed WeWork, but it may have actually saved it instead. Please tell us how so.
This is another one of those just contrary stories that came out of the pandemic, you know, a company that actually did well. And so WeWork, to be clear, isn't doing super well. They're just losing less money than they used to. And all the real estate experts I've been speaking with think that this sort of space is going to be doing really well when the pandemic is over. And part of that is because companies that rent office space don't really know where their workforce is going to be. So many of us, especially if you have an office job, are working remotely. We might have moved. There's going to be a more dispersed workforce. So when your company doesn't know quite where your workforce is going to be, they don't really want to have these long-term leases, you know, 10, 15-year leases on an office space. That's why things like WeWork and its competitors who offer, you know, month-to-month contracts for space might do really well when this is all over.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to ask you about something else that really made the news this year. And it was tech companies really taking a stand, specifically social media companies starting to crack down on misinformation and conspiracy theories. We saw this in the way of Twitter flags, some of its content now that it says could be misinformation. Was this year a turning point on this issue?
I'm going to say not yet. I'm going to say this was the year that the tech companies started to take it more seriously, but I don't think we've hit the turning point. I still feel like misinformation is spreading faster. You know, don't forget that the tech companies are labeling things, but often by the time they label them, they've already spread very widely. And also, we've seen research that shows that just labeling content tends to reinforce people's already perceived impressions. So if they see the tech companies as liberally biased, a warning flag actually sort of feeds into that. So I still think there need to be more effective methods. We're losing the battle. We're having debates every day about things that should be just accepted facts. And I don't feel good about where we're at as a society.
Well, there are so many other stories that could take shape as important turning points in 2021. The SolarWinds hack, Tesla's dealings, the rollout of 5G, the explosion of TikTok and the Trump administration threatening to ban it. I want to ask both of you, is there a tech story you think deserves more attention in 2021? Maybe something that got overshadowed by everything else happening this year. I'll start with you, Ina.
I think we're still, especially on the Congress and regulatory front, fighting the battles we can see, which obviously makes sense. You fight the battles you can see. But I think the invisible battle against algorithms that have bias is going to be increasingly more important. So I think the idea that decisions are being made by a set of characteristics that we don't really understand, whether that's getting a loan, getting a job, getting a house, all these things. And I think that's going to be a big issue for 2021 and the years to come.
Ronnie.
Yeah, one thing that was sort of highlighted this year was our access to broadband. You know, it became so important that if we wanted to do anything, social life or work, we had to have fast internet. And I think because of the pandemic, the issue of inequality in broadband has really been highlighted.
Ronnie Mola is senior data reporter for Recode, and Ina Fried is chief technology correspondent for Axios. Thank you both for this discussion, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.